Items 5 through 8, various things in capital improvement funds, or the various capital improvement funds.
Before you move on, Mark, the public safety officers, I want to be clear that the police chief and the fire chief are unified in not fighting with each other or recommending against each other. They're working together, and they will help you with information so that the common council can decide what the hiring mix would be. The chiefs are working together on this, and we should all do what we can to not put them in a bad spot. Take their information and make the decision on our part. Alderman Taylor.
So are you saying they're going to have a joint recommendation to us then of what it should be? Or are we going to be?
No, they're going to have individual recommendations and all the data, and we'll pick.
Oh, okay. Well, so then they, I mean, it's not, it's, this is just simple math. There's three positions.
Right.
So either somebody's getting all three, or someone's getting two and someone's getting one. All right. So,
yeah,
I mean,
that's correct.
Right. So to say that they're not working against each other, they're going to have two separate plans. They're going to say, I mean, I'd be shocked if the police chief says, hey, give the fire two, we'll take one.
He already said that.
Did you?
No, teasing.
Well, that's good. Okay, that's done. We're done. We're unanimous. We're going to go that route. I mean, like, seriously, this is, so you can't sit there and say, well, they're going to, you know, work together. I mean, if they came in with a joint statement, otherwise they're two separate, and we're going to lay it on us saying, do you want to have your house burned down? Do you want to, you know, not get pulled over driving out of here? I mean, like, which one? No win. So you, nice.
That's why it goes to us.
That's actually the, I want to dig into that a little bit more here in just a second. I do just want to point out briefly here, and I'm not going to run through each of these, but if you look at that list of items that were funded, you can tag each one of them back to one of those five options that we talked about this summer. Each of them fit those sort of strategic options, and it spread through each of the five. I won't go through each one, but you can trust me they're there. If you want to read it in detail, it'll be in the transmittal letter in your budget book. So I do want to talk about those public safety officers, because this is a little different, and it's one of the primary impacts on the operations of this budget. They're funded from the landfill siting fees. At this point, we haven't talked about establishing what rank or in which department. We've actually created a separate department that you'll see in the budget called General Public Safety. It's an idea Paul had. It was a good way to put the money in the budget specifically for the public safety purpose without coming to that conclusion. Because this council and this city spent a lot of time a year ago in 2018 talking about these public safety issues. We hired a consultant who did a lot of work evaluating that need. But through that process, there wasn't really ever that point where we sort of had to sit down and weigh those priorities and find those merits and look at which one is going to give us the biggest bang for our buck and what's the bang that we're trying to accomplish. That's something that, you know, staff, that's why we're trained professionals, supposed to be here to help you figure out. But ultimately, it's that prioritization that we felt in this budget that the council needed to weigh in on.
Hunter?
Yes, sir.
When we talk about public safety, where are we at with DPW? Where are we in terms of staffing? Because when I look at public safety, I used to say this all the time with, you know, Jerry and Jack. I mean, if those roads aren't plowed, our guys can't get there. So, I mean, like, where? So I see three positions. Why not one to DPW?
We'll call that foreshadowing. So we actually will talk about that in a slide.
So we're playing a game here. We're being tricky here.
I'm just walking
coming
through
up.
The budget in order.
I mean, we're going to drag us on for 2 hours tonight, or are we going to get to the point?
I'm just walking through the budget in order, and the biggest thing is three public safety positions. One intended to be funding on an ongoing basis, just like every other position. Two, we're calling provisional. Why can we do provisional? We can look at our roster of personnel and see we're going to have periodic turnover over the next couple of years from people retiring and whatnot. So we can use attrition. So we don't have to worry about offering somebody a job and say, you know, it's a provisional job. No. When we hire somebody, we're keeping them. Because on the bottom there's still benefits to that. We have increased productivity while we have the extra person. While we have that extra person, we're going to be, in all likelihood, reducing the stress level for existing employees with less overtime, having the extra body. And if they are ultimately absorbed through attrition, when that retiree goes, that person who's filling their shoes already has experience, hits the ground running. So there's definitely benefits from doing it. It's not just sort of throwing money down a hole.
And they're reduced cost.
Yeah. So, the budget doesn't identify which positions, because we know that discussion of prioritization really hasn't happened. There are some other positions included in here. There is a heavy equipment operator for the highway department. There's a halftime sanitarian, and an increasing one of the positions in the clerk's office to full-time. She requested both. There was only funding for one, so she may circle back and ask to have that sort of distributed, and so that she still has more of a balanced area. But there's funding there for about 0.38 FTE. From the sanitarian position, the director proposed some other cuts in her budget that helped fund it, including earlier in the year, she reclassified a nursing position downward to a public health one that saves money overall. So it was part of her broader plan to be able to serve the department, and was funded in part by them. And Alderman Taylor, I think the mayor agrees with you that the pressure on DPW has been pretty substantial. And we've tried in a couple of previous years to add funding and not been able to do it. One time it was added and then had to be never filled. We do have a heavy equipment operator scheduled in the budget at this time.
Before you move on, when we talked in the budget stuff about personnel, in the back of my head is where do we have problems that could be solved without throwing gazillion dollars at it? We all know where our bottlenecks are. Lots of stuff stops at Mark's desk because he's just got a million things to do. We got issues in the planning department that are slowly coming back. DPW's has a problem. And of course, police and fire always. But I wanted to find a way to fix that. And the one suggestion I have that would help the whole city, if you all would keep in mind and try to find some money for, is an assistant for Mark who can do the more routine stuff and let him do the higher level stuff, and we can get more things through the city. Just a thought. Thank you, Adam.
So I want to talk some about the personnel payroll costs and the merit component of the pay plan. One thing this budget had to anticipate, if you recall back in July when we looked at the increase, our increase for this year was 1.55%. That was the second lowest of our comparable communities. We were able to do that because if you look over the four-year period that the pay plan's been in place, we're still right in the middle. But we sort of moved from the tail end of the leading of the pack, the top half, to the front end of the bottom half. And so we have to anticipate we're probably not going to be able to get away with a 1.5% if we're trying to stick to our policy of where we are against comparable communities, because wages generally in the marketplace have rebounded to some degree. And this budget anticipates that some. And I think it's important that we consider that. And we'll have time to do that. You won't actually set that rate until the middle of the year like we usually do, but we do address that. But at the end of 2015, when we adopted that plan, and then 2016 was the implementation year, one of the key components that the council pretty much demanded as it was developed, that we build a merit component, a pay performance component into it. And we built a hybrid system where the bottom two-thirds, you're getting some automatic increases to try and get you up to a rate where we don't lose you going to other jobs till you meet that sort of competency level of performance. But above that top third was only got movement within that range if there was a merit award given. Through 2017, 18, and 19, we never funded any money to it. The effect of that is that we've effectively sort of neutered our pay plan. If you were above the, if you were in that top third when the pay plan started, you have not made any progress within your pay plan. If you were in the bottom two thirds, your cap became the 65th percentile. You couldn't even get into the merit range because we haven't funded that. So we either have to revisit the pay plan or we have to begin to fund the merit component. Now, there's work that would need to be done there. That was what, when it was adopted, there was a significant discussion on the fact that we have to see exactly how to do that, you know, how to determine it can be allocated. I know the police chief is very interested in going to a more structured pay plan, believes that works much better for a paramilitary organization. That can be considered in that same process of determining how to do it. But some money is set aside within this. There's at least $27,000 set aside for it. Where you think $27,000, what does that get? If you look at just the non-public safety, non-represented employees, with that amount of funding, you could have about an eighth of them get a merit step equal to about $1,000, and another quarter of them about $500. So you could have, you could do something for three-eighths of them. Now, you make the actual distribution per individual a little smaller, you can spread it more broadly. You make the potential awards a little bigger, you know, you can, you'll have a narrower pool. So we don't try to address that solution, but we would need to make sure we have that by the time we're getting to the middle of next year, working through the personnel committee and with the department heads and back to this council for a determination on the best way to allocate that. And there's lots of different strategies out there. But this, the funding is being incorporated in the budget to make the pay plan make sense and follow through for the employees with a merit program that we said we were going to put in place. So that's probably a key component as well. There's another step we did in this budget, sort of sticking with that theme of productivity. It's been fairly common when we've had excess general fund resources, and what I mean by excess is when our fund balance sort of gets above 30% or is getting in those high 20s, and we've typically moved some to different capital funds, capital ideas. There's nothing to say that we can't do the same thing for productivity. We have a number of positions where we can anticipate retirements that can occur this coming year. There's approximately 11 across various departments, police, fire, and DPW, two or three each, engineering and utilities. When those people retire, they usually have vacation payouts. They probably have a severance payout. They may have comp time still on the books. And that position remains vacant with no productivity until that salary vacancy pays off that was paid up front. In this case, we've allocated some of the fund balance to for those personnel costs so that they can be paid out right away, those positions can be filled right away, and there isn't any loss of productivity in police and fire and DPW relative to that.
Let me tell you.
About names, I'd like to have a list of those departments and how many of those departments.
Yeah, I can. Again, we're making some assumptions.
Based on assumptions, but I mean, yeah. I think that
that's absolutely fair. Yeah. And we have it, so we can tell you where we've put in it. But our intent there is that, given workloads and the expectations, the discussion we've already had on the need for some personnel, none of these departments can really
afford. That's a one-time shot, too.
It is a one-time shot. You know, we've done it probably three or four times in the last three or four years where we've targeted individual positions in the budget, and we said we knew this. For example, I believe when Fred retired.
Jack.
And when Jack retired. We did those same things because we knew we couldn't afford the vacancy. This is a little broader brush. not trying to get savings. At the same time, I think it's legitimate. You know, we've warned you over and over, don't use fund balance for ongoing costs. But since this is a payout cost, even though it's personnel, it's not an ongoing cost, and it's very defensible. And so instead of putting some of that towards capital, we did it towards productivity.
It would be my recommendation at the council that this be a budget item that remains in the budget and is funded appropriately year after year. Because we're always going to have turnover and retirements. We should always fund it, fund the severance. So to not do it, we're back into the same old situation.
Oh, but it also depends on the department, the economy, what's moving. I mean, if it's a planning department position and we're not having subdivisions built because there's a housing market, I mean, like, you can't just say, let's just fund this amount. We have to look at how many are expected. So it's nice having a number and what departments, and you make a decision based year after year. You don't just say, okay, next year we're going to still put, because next year could be six guys or girls, men or women. And like I said, one could be in a department that we're on a downturn anyway, and, you know.
Yeah, of course. Excellent. Yep. Same page.
Yep.
Health insurance. We've spent a lot of time on health insurance in this budget, and it is a key component to balancing the budget. The council's actions last year go a long way towards that. We do have a new health plan. I've listed it there as a mixed success from a financial standpoint. It's been a very strong success. We moved to a high deductible health plan and then created a new secondary PPO for people who didn't want to move into that had sort of higher premium participations, and we were hoping to get 25% participation. We got about over 40% participation. We had some people leave the plan altogether, and so our results for this year have been very good from a financial perspective. I say mixed success because we've already talked this year about the challenges it has created on the flip side for some retention and some hiring issues where we've had people decide not to take the jobs because they've looked at our pay plan or our health plan or someone moved to another job anticipating that our plan designs that were not conducive to their family and their circumstances. So we did a couple things here. We were able to, by keeping, actually reducing the premiums based upon the level of activity we have, based upon the analysis done by our health consultants, where we took about $225,000 of the savings, we were able to roll into the general fund. Other funds with personnel also saw some savings. And then we went into that and looked carefully at the plan and tried to say what were creating the negative pressures for hiring and retention. And we did not do, nor did we believe it was important to do sort of a holistic redesign on the plans. But we targeted two things in particular, or three I've got listed there. We were able to then freeze the employee premium share for 2020. So with the premiums actually going down, the employee share of the premium will lock at its current fixed dollar amount. So their contribution rate goes up a little, but the actual dollar doesn't. That's the same strategy we've used whenever we can each of the last 6 or 7 years. It helps you avoid years of big increase in the future. So we don't let it go backwards, but we don't have to move it forward. The other thing we've done is one of the problems we saw with the high deductible health plan is the out-of-pocket maximums were $6,000, $12,000. That scared a lot of people because people don't have $12,000 laying around. Very, very few people. I have four kids, no. Very, very, very few people, people saw that and they had challenge with it. Our PPO has a 4,500, 9,000, that's single family. But very few people ever get to those numbers because you have to pay out your deductible, and then in the high deductible health plan, you know, once you've paid out your $3,000 deductible to get to the $12,000, that's only based on 15% of the remaining bill. So you're having to have, you know, $50,000 and $60,000 charges before you risk that
heart attack.
Now, for our health plan, when we're wanting to, you know, we insure ourselves against those extreme ones. We buy stop loss insurance so that everything over a certain level we don't have to worry about. Employees can't really go out and buy a stop loss insurance to, you know, take that $12,000 risk down to a $6,000 risk. So we've changed the high deductible health plan, recommending that. I'm telling you what we'll bring to you. You address these separately, but we'll probably move them forward during this budget process so that we can get them.
What was the contribution before 15.3?
It was half that. It was 750, 1500. This then lets the PPO and the high deductible health plan net out-of-pocket or initial deductible look equal. The savings comes from people getting into the high deductible health plan and making more better decisions in their health care and being more cost conscious about it. That's where our savings are. It's not from this deductible. And we also moved that charge. This year we paid for it out of the dividend, and it was actually charged to the general fund. We've moved it for the 2020 into the health insurance fund itself, eliminating that cost from the general fund. So, again, there's no guarantee. You see, I've underlined for 2020. It's not necessarily an ongoing thing, but we had a good year, and it was because of the changes to the design you made, but that employees participated in. So this helps take some of that good year and roll it back and encourages more people to get into that and helps those people establish some of that fund balance. So I think I've beat that a little bit, but it's a very important thing, so I wanted to make sure, and we'll talk about it more through personnel and then later. I'm going to go through this, and if there's a confusing slide in the presentation, I'm going to guess it's probably this one. But this is me when I step back and look at the budget, and I want to say, well, what's really happening here? You know, does it make sense to me? Because when we talked about that schedule of saying we need $850,000 of new expenditures a year to really achieve that ongoing level, 450 minimum. Well, if you look at the general fund expenditures, they're going up about $1.3 million when you take out the contingency, transfer the capital, that kind of stuff. Well, those provisional officers, the retiree severance, and engineering charges, which is just an accounting pass-through, there's no net impact on our dollars. Those three things, you back them out, and our net increase is only $535. Well, but you just told me last year and reiterated at the beginning that ongoing takes, you know, almost $850,000. Well, what's happening in the budget is there's lots of other things that are going up and down and sort of neutralizing each other. Savings that we had and the elimination of prisoner boarding was a $40,000 reduction. You know, workers' comp going up the health insurance going down by $250,000 helps cover, or $225,000 that we talked about, helps cover a lot of those. So if you look at that, my initial reaction when I think about the budget is what you see there on the left. Well, you take out these things, we didn't really have that much. How do we do this all? If you look at the box on the right, the easiest way for me to think about this in sort of a very broad brush, we're adding new property taxes from the net new construction. That gets you $335,000. We transferred $200,000 of existing levy from the debt service fund, where it was no longer needed based upon our 10-year trend of what our bond payments are going to be. Landfill siting revenues, already told you we put $198,000 to ongoing operations and another $120,000 that was used for the one new officer that I want to be ongoing. Well, there's your $850,000. Everything else netted out. You know, where we had savings was because we could use it to fund increases we needed. You know, if you look across all the departments that have IT stuff. Probably all of them had their cost for services and go up because every new piece of equipment you buy, you no longer own it. You buy it for a reduced price, and then you're paying about a third of the cost every year for maintenance agreements and stuff. So we have a lot of things that go up, but we found places where we could go down, or we had other things happen. So everything else was sort of a net zero. And in a very high level, you can see how we made the budget balance. And it's those pieces there in the box on the right.